programming. Now, you were a program manager in your day, but you're not talking about who to put on the radio when. We're talking about teaching kids to code, essentially, and you've got a bee in your bonnet, Mr. Cullis.
Usually I try and come with some wonderful thing about answers I found, and this evening I'm here with questions, good questions, I hope, and ones that we're all going to have to answer. And it's taken some inspiration from a session the president decided to have on Twitter early this week, offering to answer people's questions. And one from Zandile Mlotshwa had asked about whether or not the president would make programming, computer programming, writing code, compulsory for school children. To which he replied that he wants to make it compulsory and that he'll be putting pressure on the Department of Basic Education to move with great speed. Now, I can tell you there are many responses to that particular exchange, many of them quite critical about whether or not we could even be consider coding when there's so many other challenges facing basic education and secondary education, you know, the sort of people who are currently at school. But you know what? We've never had perfect conditions to try and take on tough challenges. And the truth is, and this is what Zandile had spoken about, and I think she's completely right, is it's going to be hard to try and address the current challenges given the length of time it takes to implement. Let's look at where the future challenges will come from. Start working on them now, and perhaps then you'll create a lot more opportunity down the line when it absolutely is, it counts. Otherwise, we're going to just constantly be trying to play and catch up and unfortunately lose. So in terms of how I hope we can have this conversation, Bruce, you are in a position to have to decide how with your own family, what degree you need to get involved. In the past, you might have had to think if you're going to learn a musical instrument or a new language along with one of your little ones. Now the potential for parents is, gosh, do I need to learn to write a computer language or learn how to network systems, IT systems, in order to give my child the best possible opportunity in the future?
And it's infuriating that schools don't seem to treat the fourth industrial revolution, which is happening, with the degree of urgency that we would like to see it done. I mean, you're talking about public schools. I mean, private schools are pretty much the same. I think there must be one or two outliers. But generally, you look around, you wonder just how seriously schools are taking this as it's not on the curriculum, therefore it's not a formal subject, therefore we kind of don't have to. Here's an extra that that a teacher can make some extra bucks out of. But is it really part of the core focus of the school? And it should be.
Well, here's one of the surprising things I found out when trying to determine what is the current state of it. And that was that it was first introduced over 40 years ago. Computer studies are not new in the curriculum. But you're right to point out that its adoption and implementation has been nothing short of very, very poor. And in part, I suppose, it starts with the level at which you want to get the kids exposed to it. Now, because we don't have enough people who can tomorrow begin doing this, or, you know, the hardware environments or just the physical machines needed to do this, it makes sense then to say introduce it at a very junior age, primary school level. And I think there's two kind of useful reasons for doing it. One, teaching or getting a teacher who teaches young children up to speed on the basics of what they need to introduce them for IT and software. And I'm going to make the distinction that IT is sort of understanding the computer environments and building the networks that allow them to communicate. And then the software side of things is writing the programs that allow them to run the applications and do the work you want them to do. And different people will be drawn to the different parts of it. But the basic level, I think most teachers should be able to get to a position to at least allow children to be exposed to that. And I would ask that all parents look to get some basic knowledge of it, just to expose their own children to it. So next time they're playing with your phone, ask them something about, do you know why it's doing that or how it's doing that? I'm mindful as I ask that it's possibly asking a lot, but this is typically how we need to start. And then if you do begin there, and I'm kind of reminded of stories around the Bill Gateses and the Elon Musks and these other guys, there is an affinity and aptitude that some people just have for these things. Giving them that very, very early exposure will show you that natural inclination. They'll just start wanting to play and fiddle and do something with these things. And basically, you just need to guide them a little bit and set them on their way, you know, prevent them from becoming out-and-out hackers and winding up having to spend many years in embassies and things like that. But let's be on the other side about this stuff. I think that'll be a good way to go. And then as those kids progress through the school system, they potentially become almost mentors for the younger kids. So now you've just doubled your capacity. But besides just teachers having to do that, some of the kids can say, well, I'll take five kids. You know, let's say a kid who's in sort of grade seven can look after the grade fours. And if he takes four people, then you only need so many of them. Okay. I say he, it could be she, and I really encourage it. It should be she. They should be doing these things and possibly work it up through the system that way. The other challenge that we do have, and when you start getting to high school level, you're going to need to start getting into some serious stuff. And there the challenge is, if somebody has shown a real aptitude and love for IT or software, they've got a pretty good career of them outside of the education system. So how do you sort of wheel them back in to come and say, oh, please come and do this? And so perhaps then again, we need to double down on these things like MOOCs, which we've touched on in the past. These are online type courses where you have mentors coming back more than, you know, you needing to do the work itself. And in this case, I suppose the disruption is really to the model we've been using for schooling, which is really quite outdated now, and saying, well, let's relook at how we get kids to learn things. And then so you don't need people hands-on for quite so much of the time. The idea was, don't give kids homework. The homework is done. Also, the teaching doesn't happen in the class. The homework does. So when you're solving a problem, you've got a human to assist you. But when it comes to saying, just crunch the stuff, do that on your own. Wonderful, compelling videos, lots of online content. And that even for, you know, access for South Africans, even though there is a real challenge for internet access and cost of all of these things, I think that's more readily overcome than finding enough teachers to fill all of the classrooms to be able to do all of this stuff. And then we can go into, you know, things that start getting a little more difficult, and I suppose for some parents or anybody listening, they might think, oh, you're losing me now, because building IT networks is not easy. You need to have physical sort of stuff to do that. Whereas with software, at least you're learning code. You just basically need a computer or a laptop or a tablet even. But the challenge is then, which language are you going to use? And it might surprise you. Well, let me ask you, how many computer languages do you think there are?
One. Oh. It's called computer. No, I mean, there must be scores. I'll say scores.
Scores is a good answer. I'd put it at over hundreds, but scores is probably where the mainstream, popular, very common languages are. And again, it's kind of nice that for some, there's one called Scratch. And Bruce, I would suggest you look at Scratch to work with yourself and your family.
Scratch? Why would I choose Scratch?
It's a great introduction language. And what it really looks to teach is not the how to write the code, which is like learning a language. You know, you just do that by doing it over and over again. It teaches computational thinking. And this is also a little bit of a departure for us, because we've talked before about machines getting smart or us getting dumb. Well, the truth is, machines are dumb. They can't think like we can. But by the same token, no, they can't think like we can.
Okay.
And I doubt they ever will. They have always used a very logical, like simplified version of dealing with things. Masterfully clever and fast, but they're nowhere near the sophistication of how humans interpret things. The challenge is, humans struggle to simplify things or abstract things to the point that computers do. You make one small error of explanation to a computer and the entire program stops. You and I having a conversation, we don't necessarily know exactly what we're going to say or understand everything we're saying, but we get it. That's something that computers are going to take a long time to get. So in that score, this Scratch language, taking somebody at primary school level, will help them start understanding, if I have a problem about getting my car, I'm making up a car, let's say a little thing that needs to get to the other side of this maze, you got to break it down in going forward, going sideways, going forward again, stopping, you know, all these sorts of things. And having children understand, what is this machine going to process? What is the machine going to understand this task to be, will make it easier for them when they have to come to writing the stuff out and understanding what the syntax and you know, the structure of the language is. So that's pretty good. I do want to mention some of the names, because they're all sort of slightly weird. Python is one I'm trying to learn. There's Java. There's JavaScript. There's C, C sharp. There's, as I say, hundreds, many, many of them used every day and quite popular. And then the final one, I suppose, that we've got to consider is, in the case of the president here, he said compulsory. At the moment, it's an elective. And I think there's two good cases to be said. Should it be compulsory or not? The case for making compulsory would be one that says, if you don't, we will opt out things we don't know. Because, you know, if you don't have the family history or whatever else, then you simply won't do it. And a bit like we've done with science and maths, you kind of think, well, will I really need that? And as we're seeing now, the future of most of our work is going to require us to have a much greater understanding of those concepts. So we've got to start learning these things.
And so here are the comments that are coming through on the SMS line this evening. One person, coding should be mandatory. And again, you can't expect people who can't do maths to do coding because there is a barrier there. Somebody else coming through and saying, warning on coding, it's essential that your maths is very, very good in order to code. Your maths must be at least 60% or better range in order to try coding. I mean, are there any successful non-mathematical coders? Is there a way you can code without having a mathematical brain?
So this goes to the computational thinking rather than mathematics itself. Yes, you can get around it. And a lot of new languages coming out, including ones that basically almost spoken. You just interface by doing that. And here I want to make the distinction about, elective options are for people with an aptitude that want to become the next Mark Zuckerbergs. And there will only ever be a tiny little handful of people who are creating the new kinds of code to do things we've never been able to do. What we're going to have a much greater need for is people who simply say, dare I say it, journalists use language that has been around for a long time. The skill is how you use the language. There are multiple ways you can write a story or interpret something that somebody has said, all using those same words. And so in this respect, the language and the coding doesn't need to have somebody that is, an outlier for having an engineering or mathematical ability. But it certainly helps. Wired magazine, back in 2017 already, said as much as we sort of regret the losses for this blue-collar work that'll come from the fourth industrial revolution, do people understand that programming is the new blue-collar work? That this is something that simply because we're all going to be tasked with doing it, it's going to become that mainstream, it's going to become that ubiquitous. And so it's the level that you do your coding that separates the high flyers from the guys who are simply doing a job. So in that regard, I think I'm more inclined to say compulsory, yes. But when you're introducing it, try and create streams, try and give people an opportunity with a high affinity for this to excel and be given lots of opportunity. And for those who are really not loving it, just give them what they need to get by so they're not going to be excluded from what otherwise is definitely coming our way.
I mean, you watch kids learn to read and the magic that happens once the letters all fall into place and you start connecting the sounds and you start collecting the letters, the independence it gives kids there. And try and relate that then to coding because it is simply another language. It is learning another language. If a kid can learn music, which is a language, it is a system of symbols, then they can learn coding.